Welcome to the Dan Decker Books Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Decker. This podcast is dedicated to providing my books in full, unabridged audio format. Look for new episodes every Tuesday. Now, on with the show. Lord of the Inferno, Volume 2 of War of the Fathers.
Hello, and welcome back to the Dan Decker Books Podcast. This week we are continuing to read Lord of the Inferno. Last week we read, Soray wiped away the grin, wishing she had been more careful. Can you blame them? They lost their homes and they're heading into an unknown land. Wes rolled his eyes as he looked away. She found her eyes drawn to Ter's pocket again. It had not just been her imagination. Ter had the tablet. A chill swept over her. It was one thing to suspect, quite another to know. It had been easy to make a plan when all she had to go on was conjecture. She was filled with a sudden desire to tell somebody, and for the space of several steps quickened her pace, intent on finding Zarda. No, she thought, coming to a halt. Things have changed. Jorad isn't who I thought he was, and the world isn't the same place. She would stick to her plan. Her stomach churned with the decision, but she put the thought away. If she didn't take care of herself, who would? And now, Chapter 29, Part 1. Adar felt a chill run down his spine as he examined the town square. The rough edges of the hole he had made in the ship's door were just overhead. The Hanwë and the turncoats that had been around the tower were gone. How long had it been since he had last looked outside? 5 minutes? Maybe 10. It was probably less than he thought. The town hall was quiet. A lone stream of smoke wafted up into the sky from the once-burning inferno that had been a squad of Hanwë. The mast no longer had flames, but he could still see hate waves distorting the air above it. He could also make out part of the governor's mansion and the rubble pile it had become. There wasn't a Hanwë or a turncoat in sight. The door of the other ship was up as if it was preparing for departure. Adar had expected they had little time left to live, assuming the Hanwë would attack them once their comrades had not secured the ship. He and the others would have been trapped with little they could do other than continue to fight. Whoever is in command on the other side will know that, Adar thought, remembering how the Hanwë bombs had flattened buildings in a blink of an eye. This ship is damaged. They're not going to waste resources sending others to come after us. Why do that when they can just drop a bomb? While the ship is armored well enough to protect against a blaster, I'm sure they have bombs that would turn us all into a twisting mess of metal and flesh just as fast as they leveled the governor's mansion. The thought came with a feeling of certainty. He knew that was what they were going to do because it was what he would have done if their roles had been reversed. He opened his mouth to shout a warning for everybody to evacuate the ship just as the other ship's engines spun to life. Cursing, he motioned for everybody to gather around him. "We need to get as far away from here as we can," he said. "They are going to drop a bomb on us." He wondered if the others had been able to hear him over the departing ship because nobody moved for a long moment. In the next, everybody spun into action. Helda grabbed two of the women near her and said something Adar was not able to make out. One of the two scooped up Lars. The other picked up another of the children and ran for the doorway. Congestion had already formed, and before Adar thought to do something about it, there was Helda again, forming everybody up into a line. As Adar watched the scene unfold, his mind spinning through options about what to do next, he noticed Helda glance his way. She gave him a nod that he returned. He was glad that she was trying to make up for before. It would be a long time before he ever trusted her again. But he had no doubt she would join him if asked. Given her size and ability to take charge, he could make use of her. "I'll have to be careful with her," Adar thought, glancing at Nir and Arrow. "Melia, how can I know who to trust?" He was inclined to think Nir could be trusted in a fight. But was that just Adar's need for help talking? The whine of the ship's engines increased. If it got away, the Hanwë would take with them the knowledge there were groups of humans who had figured out how to turn the Hanwe's weapons on them. It was bad enough the turncoats had escaped earlier to tell the story of how the tower had destroyed the Hanwë. Adar needed to preserve each and every advantage they had, no matter how small it was. Adar was not under any illusions. The Hanwei and turncoats had been easy to kill largely because they had not been expecting resistance. This would change once they were on their guard. He stepped forward and grabbed Nir by the shoulder as he waited for his turn to leave. The man faced Adar. "There may be a way to keep that ship from escaping," Adar said, "but I'll need help to do it. They know we can use their weapons. We can't let them tell the others." Nir frowned as if considering what to say. Arrow licked his lips. His face had returned to a normal color, but his eyes continued to dance every which way. "I can't," Nir said as he motioned to his son. "I have to take care of him. He's all that I have left. The Hanwei took everybody else." "The others are still alive," Adar said. "That's what brought you north. Join with me. We'll look for them together." "Join with you," Nir said as he bit his lower lip. 3 weeks ago, the man wouldn't have shared a table with Adar. Now he looked as though he was considering it. "I'm sorry. If it were just me, maybe. But I got to look after him. I have others counting on me as well." Adar suppressed a scowl and nodded. "Bark is around here somewhere. Take him with you if you can. He'll never make it on his own." Nir returned the nod as Adar went to the ladder on the far side of the hold. He climbed up, wondering how much time he had before the other ship would be airborne. He made it several steps down the hallway before he stopped. A voice came from up ahead. As he drew closer, he could tell it came from the command center. Biting off a groan, he brought up his blaster. "I may have cleared the ship before, but who knows what happened while I was out cold," he thought. He continued his approach, stopped just short of the door and listened. He could hear the voice but was unable to understand the words. It was too low to be human, and it lacked the raspy growl of a Hanwei. He peeked into the room, wrapping his hand tight around his small blaster so that he was pressing the button along the back of the grip. A creature, unlike any Hanwei Adar had ever seen, hung suspended in the air. It almost looked human, but several of the dimensions were wrong. The eyes were a little too big for the face, and the forehead was too high. The nose looked like it had been smashed until it was almost level with the mouth, and the creature's chin was double the size of any man's. It had hair, but it had been cut short, and the rest of the body was well built. Adar could see muscles bulging out of the clothing, threatening to bust it open. It took Adar several minutes before he realized that the creature was translucent and that he could see the far wall through the monster. The colors that Hucky had brought up on the display in front of the chair had been see-through in the same way. Those had been an illusion. This must be as well. It looked like the same technology that Darren's tablet had used to show Adar the various towers throughout the world. Since he could not understand what the creature said, he focused on its clothing. It was black with gold stripes down the one side. The shoulders were tipped in gold as well. How had he missed it before? The man-like being wore a uniform. Adar clenched his teeth. He had theorized the Hanwei communicated by flashing light between the ships. That had been dead wrong. This was how they sent messages back and forth. In the same way Darren's tablet had shown him what had happened back at Vigor Rock, this image was being transmitted from somewhere else to here. 9 bleeding, burning fires, he thought. The Hanwei commanders must already know about the tower and what it can do. If they know about that, they'll also know their own weapons are being used against them. It might already be too late to keep the word from slipping out about how the Hanwei here had encountered resistance. The message continued. The speaking creature had not noticed Adar looking into the room. Adar hesitated to get any closer, afraid something might pick up his presence and transmit it back. He kept expecting the creature would see nobody was listening, but he continued, unabated. The recognition of that fact made Adar pause. After weighing the consequences, he took a deep breath and stepped into the doorway with his blaster up. He waited, expecting the creature's image to take notice of him. When nothing happened, he took several steps into the room. Now that he was closer, he could make out the eyes a little better. They were not human, that was certain. In fact, the eyes reminded him of a snake or a lizard. But now that he thought about it, the light brown skin did seem to have scales. He would need to get closer to know for certain, but decided he would go no further. The creature stopped speaking and Adar froze, wondering if he'd gone too far. It seemed as though the creature was staring at him, but he realized it was just his imagination playing tricks. The creature raised his arm and made what looked like a fist and gave a slight nod of the head. The image faded away. As it did, Adar saw it had been below a clear circle in the ceiling. He had noticed it earlier but had thought nothing of it, assuming it to be a decoration of some sort. Now he figured it had something to do with the projection. He hadn't the slightest idea how to explain it. Adar waited for as long as he dared before moving forward, hoping the ship outside was still in the process of lifting off and not about to bomb them. Some of the ships moved faster than others, the specifics of which he needed to pay more attention to in the future. It would eventually pay off to recognize a ship and know if it was one of the slower-moving ones. He might have a couple of minutes, or it also might be too late. He moved forward to the blaster display on the wall, tucking the small blaster into his belt. The extra-large blaster still hung where he had left it, undisturbed since he'd last thought of taking it down. He didn't hesitate as he lifted one end from the rack and lowered it. When it was almost to his waist, it began to slide out of his hands. Using his knee, he jammed it to the wall. It was heavier than he had thought. "I'll have a difficult time moving it," he thought, "let alone trying to figure out how to use it." He took a breath, and while using his leg to guide it, let it slide the rest of the way until the back of the weapon rested on the floor. He positioned himself and so he was under it, and removed it from under the rack where it had come to a stop. Once he did, he shifted so it rested on his back. He waited, gasping for breath. "It's not too late to turn and run," he thought. He thought of the others. Lars' face came to mind. He hefted the weapon and moved towards the door. There was still a chance the Hunway had not reported to the others what had happened here. It wasn't until he was halfway down the hall that he realized he had another problem. How in the 9 burning fires was he going to get it down the ladder? The roar of the ship's engines echoed through the hall and increased in ferocity, taunting him forward as his heart beat faster. He ignored the question as he struggled with the weapon until he was at the top of the ladder and could put it off no longer. It had not seemed high before, but now as he looked down, he realized his options were to either push the blaster over the side or abandon the effort. Without hesitation, he maneuvered so that he could drop it over the edge. He was just about to do his best to lower it down as much as he could before letting go when Nir appeared below. "That ship's about to take off," Nir cupped his hands around his mouth as he shouted. "You need to get out of here." When Adar did not respond, Nir muttered something Adar couldn't hear and came closer with a look of resignation on his face. Perhaps he was thinking he owed Adar for sparing Arrow. "Still need some help?" Adar's grunt was lost in the noise coming from outside as Nir came to the ladder and reached up. "It's heavier than it looks." Adar wrapped his hands tight around several rods that stuck out from the front of the weapon and jammed his arms around the ladder. Sweat streamed into his eyes, but he was unable to do anything about it. The weapon strained his arms to the point he was afraid his left arm was going to be wrenched out of its socket. He used a rung of the ladder to tilt the back of the blaster over it. "Guide it down," Adar said. "Don't try to catch it." He leveraged the weapon, straining more with each inch as it moved. It was still a foot above Nir's head, and they were fast approaching the point where Adar was about to lose control over it. "It's about to slip," Adar said. "Just a little bit more and I'll have it." "Let it fall," Adar said. "Just guide the thing. Watch out for your feet." It happened fast. One moment, Adar had it in his grasp. The next, it slipped away. It crashed. Nir was there and pushing it up against the ladder, steadying it, keeping it from toppling over. When he saw Adar descending, he maneuvered it over to the wall to make way. When Adar was down, he snagged the front of the weapon and lowered it until it was at his waist. "Grab the other side," Adar said. He could barely hear himself over the noise coming from outside the hole in the door. Nir looked as though he was about to say something, but he bit it off as he squatted to heft up his side of the weapon. It still was not easy to move, but it was a lot easier than moving it by himself. Adar led them towards the door, shaking his head as he took in the hole he had made. Confound it all, why hadn't he tried harder to figure out how the door had worked? This would have been a lot easier if he had been able to get the ramp down. When they got to the hole, he went to the front of the large blaster on the bottom lip of it and climbed through. With Nir pushing from the inside, they maneuvered the weapon most of the way out. By that time, the other ship was lifting up off the ground. It was only up a couple of feet, but it wouldn't be long before it was in a position to destroy Adar's ship. "I'm going to need you to hold up the front of this," Adar said, once Nir had joined him outside and they'd pulled the weapon through. "What?" Adar got closer and repeated himself. "You better know what you're doing," Nir said. "You're going to have one shot before they see us. After that, we'll be dead." Nir shook his head as they set it down and switched Adar's sides. He hefted it up and put it over his shoulder, mumbling something that Adar could not make out. Adar swung around and picked up the back end. He found a trigger back here in addition to a button. It was almost the same exact setup as the other normal-sized blasters to which he had become accustomed. Shouting out directions to Nir, they oriented themselves until they were in a position to fire upon the ship. Yelling at Nir to stand still, Adar used his end to aim. He had planned to shoot at the engines, but once he saw the amount of flame coming from them, he changed his mind and aimed for the body of the ship. Muttering a prayer to any of the gods that may have been listening, he depressed the button and pulled back on the trigger. Nothing happened as the ship rose ever higher. "Bleeding Melia," he muttered. "Nir, look for any buttons up by you." Nir looked back, and Adar showed him the button along the bottom of the blaster and pushed on it. When a look of confusion crossed Nir's face, Adar repeated his instructions and pressed the button. Not certain that Nir understood, Adar was about to put down his end when Nir turned his attention to the front of the blaster. The ship had gained sufficient enough altitude that it was several stories in the air by the time Nir located the button. "Got it," he said. At least that was what Adar thought he had said. The blaster design confused Adar. The second button meant that this was a two-Hunway weapon. There wasn't a way for a single Hunway to press both buttons and fire it. He would have thought the engineers would want to give one Hunway the ability to use it. Unless it was powerful enough, they wanted an additional safety mechanism. Had it been made to require two concurring Hunway? In order to aim at the ship, Adar now had to lower his end almost to the ground. He was unable to balance it, so he rested the back of the blaster on a large cobblestone. Once he had the ship in his sights, he called out to make sure that Nir had his button covered. Adar covered his as well, and just before he pulled the trigger, he cried out to Nir, "Close your eyes." Afraid Nir might not have heard it, he repeated himself, yelling as loud as he could. Hoping Nir had heard, he kept his own eyes open and shifted just before he fired to make sure that the blaster was leveled squarely on the ship. A large blast the size of a huge boulder exploded out at the front end of the weapon. Adar could feel the heat of the blast. If Nir hadn't followed his instructions, the man would be blind for sure. The heat was nowhere near as bad as Adar had experienced when escaping from the fire the previous day, but he wouldn't want to be in Nir's position. The afterimage of the blast from where he was on the ground made it difficult enough for him to see what was going on. Adar blinked and focused just ahead of the blast, which hurtled through the air until it connected with the ship. At first, Adar thought it was just going to be absorbed like the smaller blasts, but it ripped a hole through the side of the ship. It seemed like the blast was expanding, but the weapon exploded before he could tell, pieces of it flying everywhere. "We did it," Nir dropped his end to the ground as large pieces of shrapnel whizzed by overhead.
That's it for this week. I hope you have enjoyed the show. Tune in next week for another installment of the Dan Decker Books Podcast. One last thing before you go. Sign up for my newsletter at dandeckerbooks.com, and you will receive a free ebook copy of War of the Fathers. The text, audio, and music for this show are all copyrighted by Dan Decker, all rights reserved. This podcast is published by Xander Revolutions LLC.